Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Then you have the young guy Haskins who's behind him, who's proven himself in college. But the biggest question is, can he prove himself in the NFL? And I think he has the ability, the potential to be one of the all-time greats because of his arm strength and what he brings to the team. I mean, this kid is unbelievable, and I watch him every single day. But he's still learning. There's that learning curve that every rookie goes through, and he's getting there. He's continuing to get better. He's fine-tuning himself, and I look forward to see what he's going to bring in the future.
Vernon Davis saying he thinks Dwayne Haskins could become one of the all-time greats based on how well he throws the football.
Man.
NFL Network audio there. We're Grant and Danny. Welcome back. 106.7 The Fan. Sean Doolittle in 40 minutes. Nats tickets next hour. Our Redskins insider is Chris Russell. He joins us on the Mattress Warehouse hotline. What do you make of what Vernon Davis said there?
Vernon Davis likes to throw around a lot of bouquets, doesn't he? Remember last year when he praised Dan Snyder and Bruce Allen to no end? I hope he's dead on about this. I hope he's right. About a month before the draft or so, that to me, and I've said this with you guys, that Dwayne Haskins is the best quarterback in this draft. Of course, I don't say that just because he's a Redskin. I just legitimately believe that that is the case. And maybe I won't be right, maybe I won't be. So I'm more in line with Vernon Davis, but I think the biggest thing that the Redskins face now is there's going to be a temptation, a natural temptation, and maybe it's not from the coaching staff, but maybe it's from everywhere else, to get this guy on the field. And I still, every bit of evidence I see and hear and know, I still don't think he's ready to take on this league at this level this quickly.
Speaking of getting on the field, we're going to see Darius Geis play football, presumably.
Yeah.
Russell, I imagine it's like two carries and then, you know, make sure he's well hydrated on the sideline, but still, it's going to be something. I don't want to speak for you, Jeeves, but I think Grant's pretty bullish. I'm basically pumping the brakes, looking at the context of Peterson and Bryce Love and Tris Thompson, and I don't know what he's going to be, but a lot of Redskins have fitted him for a gold jacket already. What's Geis's year this year, and what's his career?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, because we don't know about him being able to stay healthy, I think we'd all admit that there should be at least some concern, if not, you know, the notion that he could possibly be injury prone. I think it's a little too early for that, but there should be some concern, right? But if he can stay on the field for most of the season or the full season, I think ultimately he'll be the number one back. I don't think he'll be the number one back right out of the chute in Philadelphia week one. But I think what I look for is week 7, week 8, week 9, when he's got some oil running through the engine, when he's been through, you know, his first 6, 7, 8 games in the NFL, when Adrian Peterson may have carried the load early on to ease Darius Geis back in. Maybe they rotate each other every series. Maybe they're, however they decide to do that. I think eventually you want to see Geis start to separate. Like Adrian Peterson had those two massive runs last year, the 90-yarder in Philadelphia and the 64-yarder to finish off the Giants at MetLife Stadium. What I need to see more out of Geis is more 20, 25, 30-yard runs for this offense to click and to hum and to run like the engine that they want it to run. That's what I need to see. And as soon as I start seeing that, and assuming he can stay healthy, I think he's going to be fine. And then I would look to be, you know, again, 1,000-ish yard rusher this year, hopefully. And, you know, maybe as a max, I don't see much more than 1,200, but maybe I'm wrong on that.
Your voice is trending back up, Rainey. I like
it. Yeah,
that.
It's getting a little bit better. It's been a rough last 6 days for your boy.
Did you do the doctor yet and try to get some meds?
No, of course not.
You have to do
Pull a honey in your tea?
No, I have done a little bit of honey in the hot tea. I am so hot teed out, I can't tell you. I mean, I have had so much hot tea, I'm gonna start floating away. So, but yeah, it's been a rough week for your boy.
Wow, you sound good. I like that about
this. Thanks, I appreciate that.
It's sweating sultry right now.
I'm sweating profusely. It's disgusting.
Top three wide receivers in terms of impact this season statistically.
I'm gonna go Paul Richardson, still number one, because I think he has the, again, health is obviously a huge issue. But I think he has the ability to change this offense much more than people realize. Not only the deep vertical game and the home runs that he can hit, but I also think he's really good at those 50-50 balls, plucking them over the middle of the field on the deep digs and or intermediate digs or the, you know, deeper crossing routes, that type of thing. Whereas I think they've been missing that type of guy. So I'm still going to go him. Number two, I'll go with Terry McLaurin as the number two most productive, however we want to measure that, yards, catches, touchdowns, whatever, in terms of receptions. And number three, I'll go with Doxson because I think...
No love for Trey Quinn.
I mean, everybody makes fun of Josh Doxson. I mean, look, Trey Quinn's got to stay on the field too. Like, I love the guy, but he's just got to stay on the field. And so far, it's three injuries, and maybe they're all just, well, just bad luck, just happenstance. But, I mean, I don't know. I'm not one of the – like, it's the same thing with Case – what the hell is his name? Colt McCoy. The bottom line is you at some point look at a guy and say, okay, is this just bad luck, or is this guy just injury-prone? And I'm starting to think that and wonder that and hope that's not the case when it comes to Trey Quinn, because here's what I know. In the game and a half that he played last November when he came back from the first injury, he was targeted 12 times and he had 11 receptions and a touchdown. So they are going to use him and they are going to count on him and he is going to be good. I just, at this point, I'm starting to lose faith. I already had very little faith that he or they can keep him healthy.
Chris Russell with us here. Oh, Grant and Danny. Russell, we all know you don't do this for money, that you are independently wealthy and you are a mass millionaire. And
right,
you just kind of cover this team for fun.
Yes, yes.
If you had to bet the entire Russell estate and fortune, not
all 5 cents of it, all not, 5 cents.
You're being modest. Everyone knows you have a money bet.
Yeah.
If you had to bet all of this on whether Monte Nicholson, and we can figure out whatever criteria you want, balls out or flames out.
Ooh,
hot little sports topic came up with us now. Balls out or flames out? What do you bet?
You should work for ESPN, Danny.
If he balls out. Oh, there we go, Tommy. Balls 95%
chance they've done that segment on one Skip Bayless show or another 100 times.
Max Holmes like, this is a ball out situation.
Yeah, he's going to flame out, and I'll tell you why. It's so much of that.
Ball out versus flame out, Russell. Go.
I'm going to say he's going to ball out more than flame out.
There you go.
I don't know if he balls out in the classic sense of, you know, like Derwin James and his impact and Ed Reed. That's not what we're talking about here. But my definition of balls out is something similar to the impact that he made against the Raiders back in his rookie year. Maybe a couple of plays like he, of course, made last Thursday night where maybe he's just more lucky and then he uses his speed and athleticism. Listen, to me, I think it's a victory for the Redskins, A, if he plays 13, 14 games and stays healthy, because a lot of people forget this kid hasn't been healthy, both at Michigan State when he came here and then in his rookie and last year. And then, two, if he stays out of trouble, right? I mean, what he did last year was unforgivable. I'll never, ever, ever forget that. And I'm sorry, maybe that sucks for a lot of people that like to defend athletes for every reason under the sun. I can't forgive that, especially at the time that he did it. So to me, if he doesn't do any of that, and if he's reasonably productive, 2-3 interceptions, a fumble, a forced fumble, a fumble recovery, whatever it is, and if he plays 13 or 14 games and he's not a knucklehead, that's to me balling out.
I like the use of tree for three.
Yeah.
It do a tree.
Was that?
Couple of two tree.
Was that by design?
Maybe. I don't know.
That's like an Italian bit you're working.
It is an Italian bit.
To a tree interceptions, a couple of fumbles,
tree
by the
meatballs. The guy's last name's Russo. He has to go by Russell because of the mad dog.
I want him coming downhill. You understand me? Coming downhill, making plays.
I'm always doing something to try and keep you guys on your toes. So
thank you, Rini.
To a tree things.
I rate that segment a 3 out of 4. Slash Russell, boys and girls. Always love having him on the show as our Redskins insider. Next, what Aaron Boone suggested should be done in Major League Baseball. A lot of people are saying this is insane. I think you dislike it.
I do dislike it.
I like it a lot the more I think about it. Next on G&D. And remember, Sean Doolittle at 11:45. What happened to Sean Doolittle? How we got here and the role of closer as it continues to evolve in Major League Baseball. But before we get to Stanton and even Doolittle himself, who's going to be on the show today at 11:45, there's a non-Nats, somewhat baseball, but I think more just great sports dialogue that needs to be had. So I saw this over the weekend, Danny, and at first I got to tell you, my initial take was, oh, this is such a terrible idea. I even went hotter than that with my initial take, which was, man, society's getting soft. And then the more I thought about it, and it's not always the case for me that I kind of, after a little bit of thought, will have a change of tune. But after hearing the reasoning, I said, you know what? I get it. And now I completely support it. I think it's a great idea. So here's the story. The Yankees had just played a game where Mike Ford got a chance to take the mound in a huge blowout 19-5 loss to the Cleveland Indians. He's a position player. Over 50 position players have pitched in the big leagues this year. We saw Gerardo Parra and Brian Dozier throw meatballs up toward home plate and walk a bunch of guys in Arizona not long ago. The Yankees manager, and he's probably going to be the manager of the year in the American League, he's outstanding, is Aaron Boone. And he was asked about the emergency situation, essentially, and having to use a position player, and there was a big conversation after the game about it. But he got into this idea where he said that he thinks there would be a benefit to a mercy rule in Major League Baseball. We have no mercy rule in any other sport professionally. Like if you're up 15-0 in the NHL, you play the game. If you're up 79-0 in the National Football League,
60 minutes,
you play the game. He said you would probably eliminate a lot of the unwritten rules of people running or swinging at 3-0 pitches in the wrong scores. Just be like, if you get to this point after 7 innings or whatever, there might be some merit worth exploring. He's not advocating hard or saying we need it or it's a must. He's saying, let's talk about this. So, I'm with Boone. Let's talk about this. And we can open up the Hadid carpet cleaning listener lines. I genuinely believe this is one of those just really good, tremendously helpful things to throw out there and have people's opinions come in on. There's no right. There's no wrong answer. 800-636-1067. What would you think of a mercy rule in Major League Baseball?
I hope they never do it. And it's one of the things that makes pro sports still professional. At little league levels, at high school levels, most high schools, by the way, don't have this, but in like, you know, various forms of summer ball, whatever, you're trying to protect kids and there's only so many guys, you're playing a game a week, you can have a mercy rule. And that makes good sense, right? At the amateur levels. In the pros, one of the beautiful things is you got to get 27 outs. So the Yankees are the best team in baseball, and they got shellacked 19-5 one time. That doesn't change the arc of their season. This is about roster construction. It's about, yes, what happens today also affects tomorrow and 2, 3, 4 days down the line. I want a team to experience that adversity. I want a team to have to go through a struggle. I want a team to have to be the team that's putting up 20 runs one time, that I want the team to also be like the Nationals were, where Gerardo Parra's got to toe the rubber. To me, that's the beauty of pro sports, that all these guys get paid to play, and all these guys have to one time be the windshield, and sometimes they're the bug. I think that's a beautiful thing that should never be tampered with.
Fine argument. The mercy rule, the comment from Boone, and the idea of the implementation of the rule, though, would have nothing to do with avoiding shame or humiliation for losing.
Mm-hmm.
This has zero to do with Boone saying, you know, guys, they have to go through a really embarrassing couple hours on national TV. No one's saying that. No one cares about that part of it. Players, that rolls off their back. They care less about being on that field down 19-5 probably than the average fan does in that moment. It's one of 162. They get off the field. They wash it off. They go eat a steak dinner and have a beer, and they're back on the field the next night.
They can laugh about it. It's not a big deal.
Exactly. This is not like little leaguers where you have a mercy rule to protect their psyche and protect their confidence, which is kind of what you're arguing against.
Well, it's more, just to clarify, it's more, yes, that part of it for a 9, 10-year-old kid. If, you know, one team is completely imbalanced, which happens at amateur levels. In the pros, you don't have that as much. But the other part is if it's 100-0 in a baseball game, not that that would happen, but now you're asking kids to throw dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of pitches. That's more the protection there.
Yes, and in Major League Baseball, that's more along the lines of what this is. Position players pitching is a fun thing to see at the ballpark. It is. I always think it's wacky. I was about to see that with the Nationals, where they were going to ask Asdrubal Cabrera to come in the 15th inning and extras the other night. Had Joe Ross have been able to keep the game going in the bottom of the 14th, send it to a 15th inning. That would have been a cool thing to see. But over 50 times this year, it happened like 8 times, I think, 6 years ago, we've had a position player pitch because we're smarter now. Managers are not going to waste their relievers in a blowout so that they can't pitch the next day to go pitch. In other words, if you're down huge last night, the Pirates, you could go out there and you could throw a position player for an inning or two.
You probably should, to be honest with you.
Absolutely. 9 out of 10 managers would have. Instead, you burn through your entire bullpen going into a stretch where you got 8 games in 8 days, and now all those guys are exhausted and fatigued, and they all pitch, so you got to stay off some of them today. It doesn't make any sense. So managers, smartly now, are pitching position players instead, going, why would I waste a reliever in a game we've already lost? They're just punting on that game. There's also something to be said, though, with the product. It's bad. I love the Nationals. It was fun to watch that game last night. But I was more bored watching their game last night. I'm doing other things. I'm multitasking. I'm walking around the house. I watch every inning of every game, but I'm like flipping back and forth to Monday Night Football to catch some plays in between pitches because it was 13-0. Now, the big question and what I would pose to our listeners that are calling in is this, and this is something maybe I'll ask you about as well. 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. What would the rule be? Because you can't just say if you're down 7-8 runs after a certain inning.
Up 10 after 7?
I think something like that, that's a starting point. Now, you might have a 10-run comeback once every 10 years after 7 innings. You're getting rid of that, but I'm okay with that, just like I am getting rid of intentional walks because one out of every 1,000 times something exciting happens. Juice isn't worth the squeeze. But yeah, if it's after the 7th inning, a team leads by 10, after any inning after that, the game ends. I love it. I'm cool with it. You're saving pitchers. Again, it's a funny thing. It's comical to see a position player pitch. That's not a good product. Even if they go 3 up and 3 down, you get a cool story out of it. Great, I guess. But it's not fun to watch on TV. In the ballpark, most people are going home early. Very few people are staying the duration. Last night, as an example, it was only Nats fans left at PNC Park at the end of the game behind home plate doing the Gerardo Chara chop, a para chop. People, they're not enjoying the product at that point. I just think it's, these guys play so many games, so many innings. They're on their feet so much. If a game is decided early and you can get off the field an hour sooner to rest up for the next day and not burn through the bullpen and not further overwork these arms that are already overworked, I think it's a good, healthy thing. When I first heard it, I thought, because I thought like you thought at first, I'm like, are you kidding me? Really? This is the big leagues. Who cares if you're getting blown out? Finish the game. But it's not about that at all, I don't think. It's actually about the games thereafter. And to me, it's the equivalent of like Roger Goodell saying, let's get rid of every play that is terrible and boring. Let's get rid of the timeout, kickoff, timeout. Mm-hmm. Let's get rid of the extra point or move it back because people don't care to watch it. I'd say the average baseball fan, maybe even more, maybe 75% of fans turn off the game when it's 12.
A blowout in either direction.
Exactly. And maybe last night as a Nats fan, because everyone was hitting homers, maybe you keep watching thinking something crazy is going
to
happen.
You see Cabrera do what he did in the 9th, yeah.
But I'd be willing to bet, and I would guarantee you, that way more people stopped watching the Nats at some point last night than normally would. It's just not that fun to watch. And your team's up huge, and it's great, and you're hoping that Soto hits a homer or someone else does something cool. But the average fan isn't staying for that. What do you guys think about this? 800-636-1067. On the surface, it sounds ridiculous and childish, and everybody gets a trophy-ish. A mercy rule in Major League Baseball. But there's actually some practical merit to it. G&D 106.7, The Fan.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I think there's a lot. I think there would be a lot of benefit to that. You know, I think you'd probably eliminate a lot of the, you know, unwritten rules of people running or swinging at 3-0 pitches in the quote unquote wrong scores. It would just be like, hey, if you get to this point after seven innings or whatever, there might be something to that, some merit to that, and worth exploring. Because it's not fun to have to put in, you know, obviously a position player in that kind of situation, even though I think, you know, for Ford and some of the guys, it's fun. Guys can have some fun with that. But, you know, sitting in my chair, you worry about hurting someone. You hate throwing up the flag like that, and sitting there and getting kicked in the mouth is no fun. So, you know, I'm sure there's something to that question.
Aaron Boone, manager of the Yankees. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. He brought up a great point we hadn't gotten to in that cut there that Thom just played, which was a lot of the benches clearing brawls that you see either start that night or began weeks earlier during games like this.
Uh-huh.
Because one of the biggest issues with the unwritten rules in baseball is the code is not always the same for should you be able to lay a bunt down with a certain score? Should you be able to run when the score is at a certain point? Swinging 3-0, when do you stop?
Are you stealing a base? You're up 10 runs in the fifth.
Exactly.
And then there's the gray areas. Yeah.
And he's saying you can end some of that charade to some extent. We're taking your tweets at Grant H. Paulson.
At Funny Danny.
I got someone here who says, if a mercy rule took away a leading team's pitcher with a no-hitter or 20-plus strikeout performance, that would be very negative for the game. Well, there have been 4 20-strikeout games in the history of the sport. So that's not a reason not to do something, in my opinion.
Yeah, eliminating the intentional walk, you don't have Aaron Barrett throwing it back to the screen in a playoff game and then recording it out at home plate.
But even
okay,
in that
fine.
Case, that happens once a year.
That's my point. It happens once in a millennium.
This has happened 4 times since the game began. It's not going to happen anytime soon. It's very rarely going to happen ever. That's just not a reason. Now, no hitters. I did the math on this as well. Yeah, you could have a no-hitter in a 10-0, 12-0 game, but it's happened 6 times since 1971. Not a reason not to do it. And this guy says all the more reason there would be a negative impact.
I don't get that.
Well, his point is it would have been a more impressive accomplishment because it never happens. Yeah, it's just not a reason not to do something that the rest of the time works. In general, I always say this, but in life, to not change something because of like the 2 or 3% of the time it might backfire, to me is ridiculous if 90-plus percent of the time...
So we don't want to prove it at all.
You accomplish and achieve a goal that you're trying to. Now, this is a fun little debate, and you hate it. I kind of like it. And I don't know that I love it, but I would say I'm close to loving it. I want to do it. I want to change this. I'd like the mercy rule. But we got a lot of calls coming in as well. 800-636-1067. Here's my question. 10 runs after 7, good enough if you were going to do this, or would you go higher than that?
I'd have to have a really high threshold. So I'd say 10 after 7 is just what kind of comes to mind.
I don't think you'd ever stop the game before before the 7th ended.
I wouldn't want to.
I think even if it's like the Nats last night were up 13-0 a few innings in. And,
I'm not stopping the game in the second inning. I'm
no
just
chance.
Not. Yeah.
And nobody would advocate for that. I think what Boone's talking about and what the people that are saying this is, all of them are kind of saying after 7. The question is how many runs? Is 10 high enough? I mean, could a team come back from 10 runs? A bunch of tweets and calls coming in, so let's hop to them. Start with Don in Ashburn on Grant and Danny. Your thoughts on a mercy rule in Major League Baseball.
Hey, fellas. Well, you know, one of the things that baseball does have that nobody else has is that after five innings, the game is technically official. And if it needed to be the rest of the game needed to be canceled, it can be. And it's still a game. So you already have something in place from that standpoint. Look, I'm not going to lose sleep over this regardless of what they decide to do, but I would think it's worthy of a conversation. And I think one of the points you were just making, if somebody's in the middle of a no-hitter, they could even take it to a point where after the seventh inning, even if the umpire pulls the coaches out and says, you know, hey, here's the situation, this is what we're up against, and the coaches make the decision together that, yeah, let's do it or let's not, and they take everything into account. So
I guess. I mean, I think you got to have a hard and fast rule.
Yeah, I'd rather not do that.
I want to put it in the hands of the coaches because then, hey, Skip, did you send a message by quitting? You know, should you have kept playing there or something like that? I don't like putting it in their hands. I think it's just a rule or it isn't. But I love his point on, you know, people that say, we finish games in sports. Well, in baseball, if it rains and you've played literally four and a half
innings,
and
the home team's winning, then the game's over.
The game's over. That doesn't happen in football or in any other sport. When you start, you got to finish. Not in baseball. Bob in Kensington, what's up?
Stop it. Stop this conversation. The next conversation is going to be, okay, well, then let's just make the game seven innings. The rules in baseball are, you know, are great. The game is great. The NFL is a joke because the rules change every week. This isn't Little League. Don't change baseball rules. It's going to lead to a seven-inning game eventually, or those conversations. Stop it.
I don't think it's going to lead to a seven-inning game at all, myself. I don't think anybody's advocating to shorten the game. If anything, they'd shorten the season by some games.
Which I'd advocate for. I also think that joke of a league you talked about draws a pretty good amount of eyeballs.
Yeah, the joke of a league that's the most popular league in the country that pummels baseball and television ratings. And you mentioned that the baseball is great. Well, it is. I love it. Danny loves it. He played college ball. We've grown up just absolutely invested in, and in my case, kind of addicted to this sport. I'm also acknowledging that kids don't love it, and the TV ratings aren't that great, and we can make it better. But this isn't necessarily making it better by changing rules like some of that we've discussed. No, this isn't wanting the DH in the National League, which I also do. Nobody's shortening the game to seven innings. This is as simple as, is this a way to potentially make the product better for the 5 days after these blowout games that kind of happen occasionally? And how many are there really? I mean, we're talking about how often does this happen? Maybe over the course of a season for any one team. Three, four times?
Yeah, a couple teams. Well, then you start adding it up, and maybe you could get 50 of these games, because you mentioned 50 position players have pitched. So that's right. Kind of about what it is. So it's one or two times per team for a year. What I want, though, and that I think we would lose in this, is let's say it's the first game of a series. Let's say the Nats and Braves are playing, for the sake of argument, and they'll play later this year. Let's say the Nats happen to beat the brains out of the Braves, the first game of the series. I want the rest of the series to be affected. Because the Braves had to go to their bullpen and have everybody throw. I want that advantage. I want teams affected. I want teams to have to go through that adversity. And you would lose some of that by taking that away. The counter would be, well, injury. You're not rooting for injury. Not necessarily, but I do love the idea of weakening your opponent, that not all losses are created equal. I think you lose that.
I think
that's
a good argument. Yeah, if you pound the Braves, it's not your fault. Now, if you're on the flip side of it, you'd like to have just as good a chance the next day to come out and kind of wash it away and momentum be quelled. But I don't know that it's kind of the end-all, be-all in the regard that you could also make the case that the product has to matter a whole lot, too. And the product, not just that day, but the next day gets worse. And there is something to be said. Again, it's fun to watch these position players pitch. It really is. But there's also just an amateur feel to it, like the game doesn't matter. And you're paying a lot of money for those seats. And next thing you know, it's like, oh, this team literally has quit. And now they're putting in Brian Dozier to throw 52 and have batting practice hit off of them. Like, that doesn't feel great in the ballpark when you really think about that either.
What would you do for fans, though? Would you prorate the ticket if the game gets called after seven?
No.
You take a couple innings away?
If you see four and a half innings of a rain delay? No, I don't think that'd be necessary. I mean, if the game gets rained out with three innings to go, do you prorate?
You just get jobbed?
Yeah. I mean, you saw 16 runs scored or whatever it was. You saw baseball. 800-636-1067. We'll continue taking your calls. Also scheduled to be joined by Sean Doolittle of the Nationals next on The Fan. Grant and Danny welcoming you back on 106.7 The Fan on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Our guy Sean Doolittle joins us, as he does each and every Tuesday at 11:45. And for the first time all season, not a member of the active 25-man roster. He's on the injured list. So I guess before we even get into, you know, the end of the run of health this weekend, give us an idea. You're on the IL with the knee issue. How long has that been barking and a problem and trying to overcome it? And just take us back to what you were dealing with.
Yeah, I kind of battle a little bit of knee tendonitis. regularly. It's something that I've managed throughout my career. This year I tweaked it when we were playing San Diego. So I guess that was in San Diego. So I guess that was early June. Since then you have good days and bad days with it. But I think that might be one of the reasons how I got to this point, trying to compensate for it, maybe favoring it a little bit, even if subconsciously. And my mechanics kind of eroded a little bit, and that led to some ineffectiveness. So it's this just beautiful, chaotic, circle that we have to just stop, press pause, get the knee right, and, get things back to where they need to be.
What's your program going to be like here while you're on the IL? Is it just rest? Are you doing that like meticulous, terrible rehab kind of stuff? Are you throwing? give me kind of what's going on.
Yeah, so I took a couple of days off of throwing. We'll start throwing again today and tomorrow, just real light. But as far as the knee goes, we're doing some stuff in the weight room. I did a couple of sessions with the strength coaches yesterday, just trying to get some of those movement patterns back, kind of remind my brain and body, what it's supposed to be doing. Really, really activating a lot of the muscles around it. There's a lot of stuff that I've been doing as, kind of part of a maintenance program to try to keep it at bay that, we're taking it up a notch, while we're here, on the IL to really, try to wake it up, so to speak. And get it moving the right way. Just so in my mind, I know that I can trust it. When I get back out on a mound, and then from a pitching standpoint, I think there's some things that I can do mechanically to get my body into a better position. We've talked about this. It's been something I've kind of battled all season long. Real inconsistencies and, haven't quite been able to get it right. And this is an opportunity to really, to get it right, to work for, a week and a half or so on, there's certain things in my mechanics that I'm not getting to right now. And if I can get my body in a better position, specifically over the rubber after that leg kick, coming down and collecting my body over the rubber before I drive down the mound. That's something I've kind of been rolling through right now. And it doesn't allow you to use your lower body the way that you need to, especially if you're a four seam guy that needs to ride the fastball out at the top of the zone. So we're kind of killing two birds with one stone here, but, it's a good, it'll be a good break to get my body ready for, September and October.
Did any part of the mechanical issue, when you're talking about being over top the rubber, you got rid of that toe tap at one point. Is that part of this or no?
We're looking at it. I mean, I don't know if the toe tap's going to come back, but I do need, at points in my career when I wasn't using the toe tap, I had a little bit of a hesitation or a, some people called it a hitch. There's a gather over the rubber. In no way, shape, or form am I comparing myself to Kershaw, but you've seen him pitch. You see the way that his leg comes down and almost touches the ground, and then he kind of has like another kick before he goes down the mound. I had a little more subtle version of that, but that's just to say, like, I need that motion back where I come down before I go out. Right now, it's almost like I'm going right from my leg kick to the bottom of the mound, and you lose your hips and you lose the way that you can't drive off your back leg the same way. You're basically falling down the mound rather than driving and getting behind the ball. So. I don't know. I don't know if that's when it started or if that had anything to do with it, but that's something we're looking at.
Sean Doolittle on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. I was at the game on Saturday night. You know, it's fascinating because we've gotten to know you so well that even though the game wasn't going well, I was kind of heartbroken for you. I mean, it was gut-wrenching to watch. I'm curious just what the experience is like internally as you're trying to gather yourself, you know, four straight batters and the three homers. You hadn't given up a homer to a lefty since 2016, and baseball's so weird. You know, two and three batters do it. Like, what was that whole night like? Could you tell in the bullpen something wasn't right? Were you surprised at all when you look up and you see 91 miles an hour? Just kind of take me through one of the weirdest and probably worst nights of your career, unfortunately.
Yeah, you know, which is I thought that Friday was a big step in the right direction. That was the best I'd felt. I thought I had the better life on my fastball than I had had in quite some time. So, you know, I really thought I was turning a corner, and then, you know, warming up in the bullpen, I didn't feel as good as I felt on Friday night, but I, you know, thought I was every bit good enough to grind this out, especially with a 3-run lead. You know, I thought I was, you know, you just have this mentality, as a reliever, as a closer, that you're just going to find a way to get it done. There might be some nights where it gets a little bumpy, and you have to buckle in, but, you just have that confidence, right? Where you're like, yeah, I don't feel as good as I felt the night before, but I'm going to grind this out for the boys. I'm going to find a way to get it done. And, you know, then, I talked about this after the game, you know, Yelich hits the home run and you're like, all right, well, you know, he's Christian Yelich. All right, whatever. And then, you know, you go back to work and, you know, then everybody starts teeing off on you and you're out there searching and you're trying to stay calm and find a way, a path that you can navigate the rest of this inning. And, I mean, that was just tough. There's rounds of batting practice. I was talking about this yesterday with some of the guys, that there's rounds of batting practice guys hit before the game when the pitcher's throwing 60 miles an hour that don't go that well. And you know, it was just so tough. It was just kind of a helpless feeling, you know, walking off that mound, not knowing exactly what the heck, like, how did that just happen? That happened so quickly. You know, I pride myself on being able to make adjustments and find a way to get things done. And I just couldn't do it.
Sean, I'd love your comment on this. This was my opinion, and I'd love just to kind of see, just to bounce this off you, see what you think. You told us early on in the season that there was a stretch where you got up 14 out of 17 games. You didn't come in the game each time, but you got up 14 times, which is almost like putting, you know, the wear and tear on your body. I counted 10 times, just doing a quick count yesterday, where you threw in games that were of the margin of difference was more than four runs, was four runs or more. You were leading the league in games finished. I think we are here because of that usage. Some of it I understand, where, you know, when the bullpen was scuffling a little bit and you got to get those games in because of the way the season was going. But some of those other ones I don't necessarily think were the best usage of you. Do you regret maybe not saying, hey, stay off me today a little bit more with Davey? Or, you know, kind of walk me through that process here. I think we're here because of that usage.
Yeah, you know, I've seen some of the speculation and stuff. And I, you know what, like at the – you know, you talk about the usage in the beginning of the season, and I mean, I was out, I wanted to pitch and help the team win. Where we're at right now, you know, we're what are we, 12 games up? You know, we've won 7 of 8. I don't really think it's fair to get into trying to play blame games and stuff like that and figuring out like whose fault it is or anything like that. I wanted to take the ball because I wanted to help the team win. I wanted to be high-fiving on the mound after the game with the guys. I felt, you know, at that point in time, you know, I felt good enough to go. And that's when the phone rang. That's when my number was called. And, you know, I was more than – I don't have any regrets about it. I mean, it's a bummer the way that things unfolded. But you know, this team, myself included, can still accomplish everything we wanted to accomplish at the beginning of the season. So, you know, I think we're going to be okay. But You know, at the end of the day, when you're a reliever, when you're a closer, you're the guy that, you know, you pitch at the end of the game, you close the game out, and you know, that's what I was doing. So I don't have any regrets. I think I have a good line of communication with Davey. He and I talk pretty frequently, and there's never ever been a time where, you know, I said, hey, I could really use a day. I could really use a day off, and I was never like pressured into pitching or anything like that. I always knew that if I needed a day, no matter what my workload had been the previous, you know, days or whatever, that I would get that day off. I knew that was always an option, and I knew I could always say that to him. So, you know, I don't know. It just happens, man. I've been dealing with this knee thing for a while, and we just got to get it right here.
Sean Doolittle on G&D. Only got about a minute left, so you could be quick with this one if you want to. Appreciate the time from Doolittle as he's getting right and mended on the injured list. What has to happen, do you think? Is it mechanical? Is it just the knee for you to come back? Because this could end up being a blessing in disguise when we look back on the last day of the season, where we come back and look at September and you were nails going into the playoffs and you're fresher. What has to happen to make sure that you're Doolittle of old when you return?
I think it's a couple things. I think the mechanic thing is the biggest thing, though, because, you know, if I do it right, I can make my lower body work better, work more efficiently, you know, even take some of the stress off my knee in a good way without favoring it. Using it the right way will help, you know, keep it manageable. And, you know, like you said, that's the attitude I'm taking into this, is as well as the team's playing right now. We got Max coming back, you know, this series, I think. And, you know, we're still in a really good spot. And I want to be able to carry some positive momentum into the playoffs. So I'm throwing myself into this process, and I'm not hanging my head. I know the last couple weeks before I went on the IL hadn't been great, but, you know, I'm excited about doing this work, getting things right, and helping the team down the stretch.
Sean, awesome as always, buddy. Really appreciate it, man. Get well soon and get back on that bump, dude.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
And I know how painful it must have been the other night, but without you, this team is not in the spot they're in right now.
Man.
And DC's pulling for you, man, and behind you. Get healthy, and we'll see you back on the hill soon.
Dang, I appreciate that, guys. Thank you so much.
You bet. See you, buddy. There's Sean Doolittle on Grant and Danny here on 106.7 The Fan. We are way late, but he's the biggest story in town, and he was exclusively right here on Grant and Danny. Why not make the most of it? A Pete's update, and we're coming back.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.